Susan Faludi's new book, In the Dark Room, is an inquiry into her family's saga haunted by every momentous event of the past century. When the feminist writer learned that her 76-year-old father, long estranged and living in Hungary, had undergone sex reassignment surgery, she felt compelled to confront a past she knew little about and a person she had long put aside. The new book is In the Dark Room. It is published by Metropolitan Books, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Susan Faludi to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
At what point did you know that you wanted to tell the story of your father?
Not for a while. I mean, my father invited me to tell her story early on. I mean, right after I got this email from my father saying, "Dear Susan, I have some interesting news for you. I'm not this macho, aggressive man that I've always pretended to be." And that was back in 2004. And my father and I had not really been in touch. We'd barely spoken to each other in 25 years, largely because my father had indeed been an aggressive, macho, and even violent man when I was growing up. So getting the news that my father had, at the age of 76, gone to Thailand to have sex reassignment surgery was a stunner on many levels. But right after I got that email and we talked on the phone, my father said, "I want you to write my story." And that became a way for us to reconnect. And for a long time, I thought of it as just that, as a way for us to begin to get to know each other again. Then over time, it evolved into an actual book project.
When you learned the news, it seems something like that changes you forever because you question. At some point, you have to start questioning everything. Or is that an overstatement?
Absolutely, because I had to question my entire framework of what I thought I knew about my father. And that, in turn, grounded what I thought I knew about my own feminism, because my father's behavior growing up had been that of the kind of consummate patriarch of, the suburban father with the armchair that only he could sit in, and he was very imperious, autocratic, and we never sort of knew when he was going to blow up. He was, we were all pretty afraid of him. So to go, and all of that sparked my early feminism. So I remember right after I heard the news, and my husband and I went out to a concert that evening, and it was actually Schnittke's Requiem for his mother. And I was sitting there listening to it and just burst into tears because I thought, I thought I had my father pegged. I thought I knew what my father was all about, and I don't know the first thing. And I felt I had done my father an injustice. I judged my father on what turned out to be a surface level.
When you learn about this, at what point did you start asking questions and then start working on the relationship and the new phase of the relationship?
Well, that happened over years, but it was, it was immediate that I got in touch with my father. And then we agreed that I would come to Budapest to see my father because my father was born in Hungary, grew up in Hungary as a rather privileged, assimilated child of assimilated, wealthy Jewish parents. That all was swept aside with the Holocaust, and my father ended up on the street, trying to survive by passing as a Christian with false identity papers. And large numbers of my family perished in the Holocaust. My father eventually makes it through many peregrinations to the U.S., where my parents are married, and were raised in a suburb of New York in Westchester County. And then after the fall of my parents' divorce, and then after the fall of communism in Eastern Europe, my father decides to return to Hungary. So there are, as you can see, several levels of mystery with my father. I mean, beyond the question of gender identity, it was my father's religious identity, because my father was returning to this country that had, exterminated more than a half million of its Jewish population. So there were many levels to explore in this very complicated story of my father's life and identity transformations.
Let's just start at the surface before we dig a little deeper. And that is, so what are your thoughts when you first see your father in the Budapest airport dressed as a woman?
Well, people ask me, understandably, people think, oh, that must be such a shock. And, it took some getting used to see my father wearing a dress and for a while wearing heels. I have to say that was the least of it, because what was really hard to deal with were all the ways that my father had not changed, was still the person that I had a lot of issues with, and we had a lot of baggage to work through. So it was the sort of dissonance of seeing my father presenting as a woman was something I got used to fairly quickly. My father at the beginning was really eager to sort of dress in this kind of girly, almost 1950s, caricatured feminine way, more Doris Day than modern womanhood. But that too abated over time. And my father began to settle into herself, she became a woman in a way that was not a cliche.
I'm curious as to how you thought about it in terms of your work. You have done so much in breaking down stereotypes of women. So and we talked about this at the beginning of how it really changes everything. Did it have an effect on your work, and not even so much an effect as that it puts it into some clarity as to why you went down this road in the first place?
Yes, because, for one thing, I thought, thinking back to my father's presentation as a hyper-masculine man back when I was growing up, he was always rock climbing or ice climbing or flogging across the Alps on a 10-speed bike trip that he insisted I go along with. When I think about that kind of hyper-masculine state, now knowing what was some of the things that were going on with my father at the time, I realized that how much that was compensatory behavior and sort of frantic effort to quell, to fit in, as my father often talked about. And conversely, when my father first came back from having sex reassignment surgery and was trying to figure out how to be a woman, my father embraced this sort of hyper-feminine model, which in large part I think was to sort of break out of the mold that she had forced herself in the first place as a hyper-masculine man. And as I saw my father finally move away from these two extremes over time and begin to become more comfortable in her own skin and define her womanhood in more idiosyncratic ways, that in turn affirmed my my deepest feminist belief that gender is fluid. There's not one way of being a woman or a man, and that we're all, you know, more complicated than the sex roles that society imposes on us. So it very much strengthened my feminism.
Do you believe that in any way that your work and those strengths that you had an effect on her?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, I wrote my second book about masculinity, Stift, and this was in the 90s. And even though we were barely speaking, I would send my books as I published them to my father. And she did say later that she had read closely that book, and I think saw it in a way as trying to understand her and have some empathy for her situation, because it's a book that ultimately is very empathetic to the difficulties that men face trying to fit into a very narrow, confining model of masculinity. And I think also that feminism gave me the tools to understand my father better. One of the great inventions of modern feminism is this idea of intersectionality, that we are, in other words, not defined by one identity, but it's the interplay of all of these experiences. And that was a profound help in thinking about my father, who, while on the surface, this, you know, is presented as to me as this story about, okay, I thought I was a man, but actually I'm a woman. But in fact, that story is deeply embedded in all of my father's other, you know, life experiences, all the history that my family came out of, my father's upbringing, my father's other, you know, profound identities, whether it's being Jewish during the Holocaust or feeling like an outcast who had to move from one country to the next, that you can't define somebody simply by one category. And that was really important in trying to get a deeper understanding of what my father was going through.
Susan Faludi is our guest. The name of the new book is In the Dark Room. In that understanding of what your father was going through, you had an estrangement. It was 25 years. When you started to work on the relationship with her, was it an understanding that you both had things that you wanted to discuss and understand, that it wasn't just about the gender reassignment surgery?
Well, I certainly understood that. And I think I would say that my father deeply understood that as well, but didn't want to discuss it at first. And part of the way my father thought about transitioning from a man to a woman in the beginning was, well, now I'm a new person, and so you can't hold me accountable for the sins of my past, because that's not my past anymore. My father, I mean, very early on in my first visit, we got into a set to over, at my instigation, over my father's violence, in particular, my father's violence to my mother toward the end of their marriage. And my father said, well, that's, you know, that's happened to somebody else. That's not who I am anymore. And that she brought down the firewall between her previous self and her past self. And there was always a struggle between the two of us, which really gets down to a struggle over what I see as the central question of identity, or one of the central questions, which is, is identity something you choose, or is it the very thing you can't escape? And I, as the journalist, wanted to dig up the past and, in the beginning, probably throw it at her. Toward the end, talk to her about it. And my father, who I should mention, made a career of a particular kind of photography. My father worked in the darkroom, hence the title of the book, altering photographs. That was my father was a high-end commercial photographic developer. So my father wanted to alter the image and felt once you alter the image, you don't have to deal with the baggage of the past. And it took us quite many years, but toward the last years of my father's life, we did come to more of an understanding. My father did begin to open up and talk about the past. And interestingly, in the final, I would say, 2 years, 3 years of my father's life, she shifted her focus from thinking about gender to thinking much more about her experience as a child, her Jewish identity. She started talking about wanting to say Kaddish for her parents. And she even, toward the end, apologized to me for some of the violence she had done in my childhood. So we both eventually got to a place of deeper understanding.
The book is so much about identity and about who we are and who we think we are and who each other is. Why do you think we still struggle with this, still struggling with this idea of allowing people to exist as they are in terms of their sexuality and gender and race and even ethnicity?
Well, I think identity is the big battlefield right now. And why that is, the $64,000 question. I think it's been going on for a long time. It's the modern condition, since probably, at least the mid 20th century or even a little earlier. The category that the culture seizes upon has shifted. So it was, a kind of racialism during the 30s and 40s, during the period of the Holocaust. And then, the identity it moved on in the U.S., another identity shift obsession that my father was caught up with in post-war America, of everyone having to fit in precise and extreme gender model in the 50s and 60s. And my father similarly, was felt that she, then he, had to play the man in the gray flannel suit who lorded it over his wife. And now we've gotten to this moment where identity seems again to be just roiling through our politics and our global politics, whether it's Make America Great Again Trumpism or Brexit or ISIS. There's this intense desire to be tethered to some kind of identity, often an identity in the case of ISIS or Trump that's kind of cooked up and is part of a desire to just deny real problems. But in another case is an identity that is actually liberating, because it requires some real self-knowledge and self-discovery. And I would put into that category, the LGBT rights movement, feminism, civil rights movement. So identity can do a lot of good, or it can do a lot of evil, as we're seeing in the rise of all these right-wing parties throughout Europe. And I think it speaks to our need to really begin to identify identity, as it were, and question whether identity actually has some real content behind it, or is actually a kind of refuge to browbeat and attack and scapegoat and blame other people for your afflictions.
Was your father able to read any of what you had written on the subject?
No, interestingly, my father, I finished a workable manuscript about a year before my father died, and told her about it, and she didn't really want to read it, which she was very excited about it, and ran around and told everyone she knew that the book was coming out, and I've pondered that a lot, and I think my father, in the end, really wanted to be perceived and chose me to write this book because she knew, as she always liked to say to people, oh, my daughter, when she does reporting, she doesn't pull any punches. You know, she tells it like it is. And I think she was a little nervous about actually seeing it. And I had said, you know, this is kind of a worse than all treatment. So there are things in here you might not like. And in the end, I think she gave me this great gift of I want to be seen as I am in my complexity, and I give you permission to do that.
The name of the book is In the Dark Room. It is published by Metropolitan Books. Susan Faludi, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is In the Dark Room by Susan Faludi. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.